Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. Before we get started, I'd like to ask a favor. If you haven't done so already, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts. If you've already done that, thank you. These ratings help the show get discovered so it can reach a wider audience. And while you're there, click the subscribe button so that you get notified of new episodes as soon as they come out. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, you can visit driveonpodcast.com/subscribe to find other ways of subscribing, including our email list. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everyone, today my guest is Daniel Faust. He has served 17 years in the U.S. Air Force and is now a relationship consultant with Learn and Live. In this role, he helps veteran couples create thriving and passionate marriages. So, Daniel, welcome to the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, so I was active duty 12 years and now been a reservist for 8. So, website's a little outdated. So, been in a tad longer. So, that just reminds me, website needs to be updated. So, about 20 years of service. And when I got married in 2006, I just totally botched up my marriage. And I was like on a deployment, wrestling with a divorce while my son was going to be born a few months later. And I realized I really needed to go over and fix myself in that particular regard. So I got a revelation to go over and teach the world better relationships. And from there, I was like, off. But my wife's like, slow down. You got to have a plan. I'm like, okay. So 3 more kids and 4 more deployments. And about 6 years later, we transformed out of the service. I won't say transition. That's a personal cuss word to me. We transformed out of service and went towards the civilian world. Oh, that sucked a lot. And we almost went homeless during that time. And we just learned we need to go and really get our marriage on board. It wasn't until 2013, because 2006-07 was the application of learning how to actually thrive in marriage. 2013 was actually living it out. We were just living and learning instead of learning and living. And that's when I got spiritually kicked in the nuts that day in 2013. And it was like, all right, I really need to revamp my marriage and treat it almost like we treat it like a deployment. We need to prepare and we need to get tasked and we need to get trained to go over and go. And in marriages, we just tend to jump in and we're like, hey, sex will solve everything. Sure it will. No, it really doesn't. It's great, like from 2 months to 2 years, that's the average. And then you go over and like, they don't brush their teeth the way I want them to, or whatever stupid idiosyncrasies we get into. And then we drive a bigger and bigger wedge. And for me, I had to learn, it's like, I needed to change myself. I needed to stop being so verbally toxic. I needed to go over and to work through my past junk so I could have a present good marriage and a better future marriage. So I started getting my doctorate degree in my spouse and getting my bachelor's degree into my kids and getting an associate's degree with the coworkers and the people I worked with. And it wasn't instantaneous. It wasn't like 2013, boom, set and done. It's been the recent of the past 18 to 24 months now I've seen of all the work I've done and now the application of it. So we wanted to take that to the world and go over and say, hey, instead of living and learning in your marriage and in your family and in your leadership, and when you get out of the service, you hope that you survive, we want you to go thrive in your marriage and your family and relationships, to go over and to connect with us so we can teach you that transformation process. And that's the first part of the transformation process that we teach, is that you're not living and learning anymore. You're learning and living, just like when you go get ready for a deployment and going on a PCS and everything else. We are going to give you the tools, the strategies, the techniques to how to go and thrive in your marriage. And the great part with us is that you can still work in tandem with other people because we're consultants. So that's us in a nutshell, that we help you have a great present to have a better future. And if there's anything else that's surrounding that, then you can still hook up with counselors and pastors and other type people. So we are a conduit to get you to the resources. We help you with communication and intimacy, and then everything else, then we connect you with those resources. Our goal is not to replicate the process. Our goal is to be a conduit to the process of your thriving.
Awesome. So I know a lot of military members, by the nature of the job, it's a stressful job. And a lot of times people bring that stress that they have from the job, they bring it home. They have a lot of different issues regarding their marriages and relationships in general, not just marriages. But what are some of the common issues that you've seen with the military members and veteran couples that they face in their marriages? What are some of the more common things?
I would say the most common things is, and I'm not trying to dime on anybody, but guys more than girls, typically, we are not social. We don't talk things out. We kind of do things shoulder to shoulder. We kind of wait until everything explodes and then we deal with it. We don't do that when we go plan out our work days. Our work days, we want to be systematic. We want things to go over and flow. Chaos can happen on the war front and then we deal with it and we tend to respond. But when we get home, we tend to hoard it and then we react. And I would say that's the first thing is that we put the focus in the wrong place. From 4 to 20 years or 30 years, you'll be in the service. But the thing is that your spouse is supposed to be a partner for the lifetime. So ranging from a few moments, depending on how long you live, until 80 years, that's at least the goal for me. I want to be dead at 105, just so you know. So my wife already knows this. I'm ready to go to Jesus at that point. I'm like, Lord, take me now. You know, but we want you to thrive to that point so you can finish the race well. And we do it the exact opposite. So that's the first thing I go over and see is that we focus on the relationships backwards, totally, totally backwards. I'll invest in more into you as a coworker, which you could PCS in like 10 seconds, or if I'm at a work site, I can interact with you for like 3 days to a week. But the spouse I'm supposed to be with every single day, I'm sleeping 8 to 10 hours a day in the same bedroom, interacting 2 to 4 hours a day after work. And I put more effort into that coworker than I might see 15 minutes. That's the first thing I see that's screwed up. And that's where we want to rewrite the script is first you need to invest into the people that are most connected to you, the most proximity. And that's how you thrive. Because if you're married, your kids are doing fantastic, then it's easy to outpour into your workflow because you already have that motivation inside you. And then you have that support behind you when those chaos days come up, deployments, op orders, long, hard days, exercises, or if you're in the civilian world and you have to work that hourly grind, or you're an entrepreneur or a vetpreneur, that's where we want you to be. Invest in the right places. And that's where I see most of the problems is that they invest in there. And then this is what happens afterwards. So let's say I don't, and I do the standard typical. I invest into all my work. My wife typically, or your wife or whoever, because this is what typically happens. The wife is at the home front, you're at the war front, you're both facing back to back. It works good for a while, but then that starts driving a wedge. So you get more, and then you might find your work wife or your work husband, depending on what veteran status it is. And then you start getting connecting with them, and then it just drives a wedge, or vice versa. The spouse at home goes over and takes care of the kids in the front, and then they connect with people in the community. And once you have that emotional, spiritual, sexual wedge in there, it just takes a matter of time for it to wedge in there. And it'll either go through an emotional divorce first and then a physical divorce, or sometimes it comes into sexual altercations and adultery and whatnot and walks in there. And it all starts just there slowly. It's that wedge drives slowly when you don't invest that time, when you don't invest that energy. So if you invest mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and sexually, and make sure your finances are in order as best as you can, you'll thrive. The rest of the stuff will fall suit. But if you don't, and then that wedge drives, then that typically destroys it. And people typically wait. 61% of divorces, last statistic I looked up, women usually pursue it, put it on the desk, and go over and deal with that because they feel they're not mentally, emotionally, spiritually, sexually connected in the relationship. And if that's not being at least at a satisfactory level of what they're looking for, and same thing for men, they look for it too, just not as in greatness, then that's what typically happens. So that's where I see the problems is we need to deal with it early. We don't go deploy and say, all right, 24 hours prior, how do you fire a gun? What? You don't go fire the M16 or the M4 the first time. You practice before going out. And in a marriage, sometimes there's a battlefield out there because monogamy is hard. Longevity is hard. If we want it to last, we need to treat it like a war front and we need to prepare for it.
Right. And you know, there's a lot of times people will feel like they are they are putting the effort into the marriage where, you know, you're supposed to, it's supposed to be a team game. You know, it's not, it's supposed to be an individual sport, if you want to make that kind of analogy. You know, you're supposed to work together in a marriage. And a lot of times what I've read and, you know, kind of looked up on this topic is that a lot of times one of the two in the relationship will feel like they're putting in more of an effort than the other person, but the other person will feel the same way. And so if you were to ask them, the two people to sit down and list out a list of maybe chores around the house, you know, just for an example, and say, what percentage do you do? And ask each person separately to kind of fill out that list. Almost always you'll find that the total percentages add up to more than 100. So it's never, because it's never accurate. You know, most people will find that they are, they believe that they're putting in more of an effort than they actually are, which is an interesting thing to look at. But, you know, kind of what you were saying in terms of, you know, practicing and putting in, you know, the effort into the marriage, it goes into, you know, the division of, you know, what you are putting into the relationship as well. I think too, you know.
Yeah, and I would agree with that to a point, but the thing is that it has to become from the other person. Let's relate the topic of sex and intimacy, just a perfect example. Men and women are different. They look for different desires and whatnot. If I go over and I think missionary position and I go do this and I just go fast and furious and whatnot, that might satisfy me, but that's not going to satisfy my wife, or vice versa. I have to be a student of that person to sexually satisfy them well. Because I can go over and say, hey, I worked at the house, changing subjects, worked at the house and did all these chores and everything, but is that to the person's liking and desires? Yeah. Typically, no. So if I go over and say, I'm the breadwinner, I do all this work, I'm on this and everything else. But if I'm not investing in them and they're looking for mental and emotional intimacy, the finances of the capability in that regard, then I'm not serving that person well. I think we get a misdirect and we go in our heads and we say, I've done X, Y, and Z. This should serve well. Those social norms were good, but if they're held as idols, they're like, this is the ultimate of what marriage is. I think that's wrong. And a lot of times we don't sit, majority of people don't go into premarital consulting or counseling, working out through those issues. So we just grind, grind, grind. We have our thoughts in our head, and then we wait until explosion day, and then we don't do that. One of the main reasons for divorce is not because of finances, is not for adultery, is not for anything else. It's unspoken expectations. I have expectations of you. You have expectations of me. We never really speak it out. We get into an argument about it, but we never clarify and saying, hey, here's one of the things that I was looking for in marriage. I want to have intimacy 3 times a week. Whoa, pony. I don't know if I can handle 3 times a week, or vice versa. I'm like, you go say, hey, you want to have it 3 times a week. I'm like breakfast, lunch, and dinner. What are you talking about? And how do we go over and love and be sacrificial in learning that? And then also compromising and be sacrificing. We need to have that balance. Sometimes I'm going to have to compromise what I'm looking for in that realm. And sometimes I'm going to be sacrificial in that realm to go over and serve the person. I think that's the particular regard, is that we need to look at it from truly the other person's perspective. I had to do that with my wife because I served myself. And I was such a verbal con artist in those 7 years of marriage that I can manipulate and make her want to what I wanted out of her. But really, I wasn't letting her having a voice and having freedom. So in that year 7, spiritually getting kicked in the nuts, I'm like, dude, I am like a verbal whore. I'm just calling it straight out. That's what I was. I wrote it even in my book. I'm like, and that was because of my brokenness. I really, truly wasn't serving her. I was serving her for the purpose of her serving me. And when everything's didn't go, then I do the verbal con artist thing and I would verbally just assault her and then make her feel bad for what she didn't go over and give me or meet this thing or emotional this. And it was, I really truly wasn't being a servant. I really wasn't being a student of her either. And I think a lot of times we say what we're doing this, but if we honestly look at it from our perspective and we take an honest lens look and allow that person to be vulnerable to share that, then we'll find out maybe we're not serving in that capacity. And maybe that's the reason why. And once you start serving people in that capacity, they naturally want to serve back. if I went over and waxed and washed your car and did all these great things and whatnot, you're like, how can I go pay you back? Well, you don't need to go pay me back. But if you want to serve outside of that, that's great. And then you start doing that. Because we do that in dating all the time. But once we get married, we kind of like put the marriage on the trophy thing and never dust it off. And we go over and like, wow, what the hell is that in the distance? Oh, that's our marriage. It's on the mantle. I didn't know that. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And you get back to that unspoken expectations, you know, when, you know, like you said, you know, if you're manipulating somebody to try to get them to do what you want them to do, I mean, you're just not, the communication is just not there. You know, you're not explaining what it is that you want and making it easy for them to want to do it for you. You're defaulting to a manipulation kind of standpoint. And that's not a way to have any sort of healthy relationship if you're doing things like that. So I know kind of switching gears just a little bit here. I know when I was deployed to Afghanistan, it really was difficult to be able to speak with my wife. There wasn't easy access to telephones or, you know, other email communication, things like that. And I know a lot of times people will be deployed or maybe not even necessarily deployed. They might be away at a school for an extended period of time or, you know, some other kind of training. And communication might be better now. I don't know. This has been about 10 years ago since I've been deployed. But what are some of the things that deployed or, you know, otherwise separated spouses can do to help themselves not kind of fall apart, help their marriages not fall apart when one of them is away?
I would say number one thing, doesn't matter if you look at it from a business perspective, a military perspective, or a tech school, whatever it is. Number one, I orchestrate my family. And this is a recommendation, not a command. So please take this, whoever's listening. Recommendations, you orchestrate yourself as a one income family. You can make two incomes, but when you live on one income and the second income supplemental, the other spouse might have the freedom, if it's a stateside TDY or even if it's an overseas TDY, to visit during that in-between time. So you can go over and stem the sexual frustration, the communication, those types of things. Obviously, Iraq and Afghanistan, you can't put your wife in a Connex box and go over and send her a husband. My wife made the joke all the time. She's like, I would stay under your like bed and stuff like that, and then we could have that stuff. I said, you would die. It's like a coffin. I mean, wanting to be connected, but that's like, you know, morally wrong. But she was missing in that connection and that intimacy. So if it's all possible, if you can stem the wounds and get the person actively involved and say, like when I was down at CENTCOM headquarters in Florida, I'm like, second child, just born, I'm away. I went there because I wanted to shorten the deployment. It was 4 months instead of 6 months. If I would have left after daughter was born, hey, I'm screwed. It's 6 months. And I could have went to Iraq. So I'm like, hey, I'll go 4 months. Sat there for about 2-3 weeks, asked my wife, she's like, the spouses are not connected to me, your first son's not connecting, the church is kind of being distant. I'm like, wait a minute, I'm getting $55 a day extra. I'm living in a 3-bedroom, 2.5-bath house. I have a sexy wife with 2 kids stuck in a place that they don't want to be. I flew her out. Mm-hmm. So we went over and stayed the majority of the time. The first, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, yeah, it was distance, but then I did that. When I went to Kuwait, or UAE, if it would have been long enough, you make an extra $1,000 a month. If you're in those safe zones, hey, let them go vacation, see if you can connect, you know? If it's obviously the longer places, you know, nowadays we have video chat, Facebook, those types of things. If you're comfortable with, you know, sexual stuff from a distance, go over and do that. They have apps and devices and whatever to keep that connection where you can. And even if you want to go old school, letters, that's the way to go over and do that. You got to find a way to keep that intimacy, frequency, connection. It's not just about sex, but that connection. Because just like our best friends when we're deployed, we want to talk to them every day. And we're with them 12 freaking hours a day. I'm like, want to hang out after work? I just was with you 12 hours, really? Yeah. If your BFF is at work and you're doing that time, then your BFF at home, which is the ultimate BFF, we should be making that time. Even in 2006, when I was deployed and wrestling with divorce, I was talking to my wife 6 hours a day. They're like, how the hell did you do that? Well, I was a comm troop. So that's another thing too, is when you deploy, network, baby, network. I mean, I knew ways to get around the system and to say, hey, oh, you get sucky phone calls. You connect with a Signal or a comm guy. They'll probably go over and say, hey, call this DSN number I got unlimited calls. So I was able to call her. I was able to instant messenger. We sent letters together. And even though we were struggling at that point, I was still talking to her 2 to 6 hours a day. And they're like, you guys are like nuts. I said, yeah, maybe we are, to go and help more people. I didn't see it at the time. But, you know, we have to find unique ways to go and stay connected. And knowing your partner before you leave, getting that doctorate degree is going to help you. If they're physical touch and words of affirmation, putting like love notes around the house so they could find all day long, you know, all through the deployment. Or if they're more physical touch, you go over and let's say leave a teddy bear, which is like your smell, or a t-shirt or something to that effect. If you're having difficulty figuring that out, give us a call. We do a 20-minute free chat for every veteran, first time, no charge. You're like, hey, I'm about to deploy. Give me some quick tips and tactics. I'm like, all right, we'll stretch and lay them out. You know, and don't forget that, you know, mail is a great connector to go and do that. I used to work in the post office. That was my first deployment. You see people light up like Christmas trees when they were getting real contextualized care packages from their spouses and not the USO one that they send you. And they're like, what do you need? I don't need jerky in like 30-pound bundles, okay?
Right. You know,
I tell these companies all the time, they're like, we want to send more stuff. We want to connect our soldiers. How about you go over and connect with them before they go and ask them what they want so you're not wasting your money? That's going to show heart. That's going to show love. So those are some of the ways. And definitely nowadays with all the frag and everything else, that's going to keep you out of the frag for a bit. If you go deploy and you're dealing and potentially killing people and whatnot, at least you have an outside coming in to go over and stay connected with. Because when you're just staying in there, PTSD is more likely going to set in. When you're constantly in the trauma and you have no escape out, it makes it a lot harder. And then when you get out of there and you finally escape and come home, you don't know how to mentally escape back into that reality. So it's definitely key to stay connected. You got to have, you mentally have 1 foot in the war and 1 foot at home, because your overall best front is going to be both feet back in that house. And that, I think that's what keep you grounded. I worked in mental health for a couple of years, and even I've always seen this world as 1 foot in the world, 1 foot in my faith. And it's the same thing when we go over and deploy. I need to have 1 foot in the war front, 1 foot in the home front. Yes, I need to be committed. Obviously, if I'm shooting people, killing people, I can't go over like, I'm thinking about my baby, you know. But the overall mentality is that if I don't start thinking in that realm, then I'll either get too sucked into my home front, I won't be good for the deployment, or I'm too sucked up into the deployment, and then I'm going to have repercussions afterwards when I get home. That integration is key. I'm glad the Army, at least nowadays, I don't know if it's current, but they used to send people to Germany and Hawaii before coming home so they could integrate with their spouses first.
Really? Okay.
And that's another thing, when you get back from home and before you leave, do the mental, emotional, intimacy connections before you leave. You know, get away from everything, rent a hotel, go get time, get that deep connection in, have a battle rhythm when you get down there, and then go over when you're coming back. I don't plug into anything before I get back from a deployment. 2011 was the last one. I don't plug into anything before I go, unless the military tells me so. And it's completely asinine to go back to work, get plugged in, go 2 weeks. If you can avoid it, at least get a night with your spouse, away from the home, away from the laundry, away from the kids, just her. Work with those Phoenix spouses or whatever team to go over and to get the kids watched, have the extra money so you can stay connected, because that's going to help you get back grounded, because that's the person that is, in a sense, your home. Mm-hmm. My favorite spot is with my wife and on here. You know, that keeps me grounded. That keeps me home. I'm not much of a snuggler, but when it comes to her, I snuggle. So don't hug me except for her, just so you know. If you ever meet me, don't hug me. But for her, that's one of my favorite spots, and that keeps me grounded. That keeps me centered, and that's key for us as men and for women, is wherever our grounded and center is, we need to stay connected.
Yeah, absolutely. I know earlier you mentioned how a transition is kind of a dirty word for you, and it's more of a transformation than a transition, and that's, you know, in regards to when you get out of the military or when you come back home from a deployment and whatnot. And I never thought of it that way, the way you kind of phrased it there, but a lot of what we're talking about are transformations. You know, you go from being a single person to now a married person. A lot of, you go from being a service member to being a veteran who's, you know, separated from the military. You go from someone who's in a combat zone, who's deployed and fighting, to someone who's coming back to, you know, stateside to, you know, a more civilian type life. There's a lot of transformations that occur, and the transition and transformation kind of those two words, it's interesting if you don't really think about the nuance between them, but when you start thinking about it, it actually does make sense that you are you're transforming and you're becoming someone new. You know, you used to be someone who was single and didn't have a care in the world. You just had to care about yourself, and now you're basically transformed into someone who has to take care of somebody else when you get married. How can it be made easier, I should say, to transform when you're going through these kind of transition periods? You know, from whether it's getting into a new marriage, getting out of the military, all of these things are all different transition periods. But what would make it easier to kind of get through all of that?
Well, the first thing off is what I recommend, and I don't see most people do this, is mentorship. Someone that's already been the transformation process on the other end, or is going through it at the same time and doing that. Your wingman, your warrior buddy, whatever you go over and call it in your service, or whatever your mindset is, you need to have that person. From going over and getting into the civilian sector and looking at the job front, to going over and saying like, hey, I really haven't been a good husband when I was on active duty, and I want to change that as a veteran now. We need somebody that's gone through those steps and get that mentorship. It doesn't have to be a counselor that has to deal with your past. Obviously, if it's schizophrenia, bipolar, suicide, homicide, those types of things, yes, they're going to help you deal with your past so you can have a better present. But if your present is not doing well and you want to have a better present and a better future, you find that mentor, you find that consultant, you find that person that goes over and does that. Maybe it's us from Learn and Live. Maybe it's a pastor. Maybe it's somebody else that's gone through that transformation process. 6.8% to 8% of the population are veterans. 1% to 2% are active duty, guard, and reserve. There's roughly 22 million of us that were war heroes that now are superheroes, and they don't realize it. But the thing is that we need to have that person, that wingman, that battle buddy to go over and to help us walk through that transformation process. It happens even in the nature, in the kingdom. You don't just go over and the animals have babies and it's like, oh, you're off, you're born, that's it. You have that nurturing transformation process, key to key. And we do that in parenting to a sense, and then we do like the baby bird and kick them out of the nest. Sometimes you need to be kicked out of the nest, of course. But at the end of the day, the bird always catches the other one. It's not going to let it plummet down. We as soldiers tend to go over and pull up our bootstraps. We can do it on our own. We're all great and awesome. Doesn't matter if it's male or female. And they go pull up their bootstraps. And you wonder why 3 to 6 years out, we're like struggling. We could have a job and we could have a still of a marriage and have kids. But we're kind of floating because we did it all on our own. And instead of living and learning, and going over and pulling ourselves by bootstraps, get somebody to do that. I wish I had that. And that's why I want to be a conduit for that, for people. When I got out, I went to TAPS for 1 week. Yeah, that's it, 1 week. They're like, resume writing, all this other stuff. I'm like, oh, that's just so much information. It just didn't flow. And then I get out of the service, sitting in a chair similar to this, like several months later, $300 almost being homeless. I wish I had somebody that went over and said like, hey, you know, it's like, maybe you should have got a part-time job in between while growing this business to have supplemental cash. I went through what you were going through. That would have been great wisdom to me. That would have been very helpful. And that's what I would say is in these transformation processes, to have somebody that's already walked through the process. So men or ladies listening to this, if you've been through that process, try to see if you can find somebody to go over and to mentor. If you're the person getting out of the service, find somebody that can mentor you. Because a lot of times we all find out we don't want to do it all by ourselves, but we do it anyway because we think we're alone. If anybody's ever gone dancing before and been in a middle school dance, everybody's on the wall and they're like, I want to dance and I want to dance too. And nobody gets up and says anything. You got to be a little awkward and go over and say it as the older person is the quote unquote mentor. And you might not know that you are one. And as the mentee, you might be a little awkward going over and saying like, where can I go get help? You know, like if you're doing business, SCORE. SCORE is a great mentorship program. It's across the nation. There's a lot of business owners and there's a lot of veterans in there. Sometimes they're mixed. That can help you through that. And it just depends on where you're at, but don't be scared to go and ask the help. And if not, then if you don't have a resource, call us. We'll go see where we can connect you with. It might be us. It might be somebody else. It might be an organization. It might be an individual person, or it might just be the person that's next door to you and you just didn't know. But that's what I recommend.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes, I mean, there's going to be a whole wide range of people who are going to be able to help you. I guess it depends on what that transition is that you're going through, you know, whether it's a job transition or it's a relationship or, anything like that. There's a bunch of different transitions and there's a bunch of different people who have gone through those types of things. They've experienced it. An important thing is a lot of them maybe have even failed at whatever it was that you're trying to transition through. So they can kind of mentor you and guide you on the things not to do, because they've already done those things and know how much they don't work. And so that they can help you not make those same mistakes, and fall down that same path. Mm-hmm. So, it looks like we're coming up on time here. Time kind of flies while we're having this conversation. But where can people find out more about Learn and Live and what you do if they're seeking that type of counseling?
Yeah. So let me frame it again. It is consulting. So we deal with the here and now. So if it's the past, I know it gets confusing. That's why we use the domain militarymarriagecounselingaz.com because most people psychologically only think of counseling. We explained that briefly on the website and we're revamping it. But militarymarriagecounselingaz.com is one resource you can find us at. You can also find us on Facebook under Daniel Faust. You can also find Learn and Live on Facebook. You can find myself on LinkedIn. You can go to IG and look for Leave No Marriage Behind. You can also look for our book, Leave No Marriage Behind, which hopefully in the next 3 to 6 months we'll have Leave No Family Behind and Leave No Veteran Behind. That's our next two books that we're working on. You can also find us in a multitude of places. So yeah, from Facebook to LinkedIn to Twitter to Instagram. I'm not on Snapchat, just really don't have an audience there. If you guys want me on there, you guys are gonna have to start listening other places. We're also starting a podcast again with Inspire News Radio. That should be up about February, March timeframe. And if absolutely necessary, you can just go over and text us direct at 937-321-0807. You're getting directly me right now. As we grow the business, we will go over and have more, you know, war hero to superhero consultants going over and helping out. And if you have a heart to go over and do this and you want to support the war heroes transforming the superheroes, give us a shout because we do a Patreon and we support about 1,000 people a month in that Patreon, not at max capacity, of course. And for every 1,000 people, we're going to need another war hero to superhero consultant as we go over and grow. We got a TED Talk coming up. We got a podcast coming up. And as we grow, if you have a heart to help military marriages, families and leadership, and you have those skill sets, give us a shout. We do a pretty good compensation plan. You get about 80% to take home from what the average client brings in. So if you're looking to help us grow at the same time, you have that too. So either way, if you're either looking for services or looking to grow that and you have a calling for it, just give us a shout from one of those areas. And you're usually getting me directly. So when you hit the instant messenger or whatever on one of those platforms, you're going to be like, it's a real dude. Yeah, I'm pretty authentic.
No, that's great. And I'll put a link to all of these, your social media, your website, and everything. I'll put a link to all of that in the show notes. So if you're looking for that and you're driving in the car right now while you're listening to this, don't write it down because it will all be in the show notes. You can catch that later. So thank you again, Daniel, and we're looking forward to seeing what you do with the business and all the marriages that you help out.
All right, thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com, or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.